Radio Prague News.
According to a recent survey, former President Václav Havel has done more for the country's development than any other politician. The former leader of the Ku Klux Klan, David Duke, is planning another visit to the Czech Republic, and higher value-added tax and consumer tax in 2010 should lower the state budget deficit by 23 billion Czech crowns. The politician that Czechs hold the highest regard for is Václav Havel, who was elected the country's first post-communist president 20 years ago on December 29th, serving three successive terms in office. A new survey by the STEM agency reveals that 75% of those polled believed that Mr. Havel did more for the country's positive development than any other politician. The survey focused on the achievements of 28 Czech politicians active after the 1989 Velvet Revolution. Among the other top-rated politicians are President Václav Klaus and the former head of the Christian Democrats, Josef Lux. The former leader of the Ku Klux Klan, David Duke, is planning another visit to the Czech Republic. On his last visit in April of this year, Mr. Duke was arrested and deported just a few hours after his arrival. The police charged the white supremacist with propagating the suppression of human rights. He had been invited to hold a public speech in Prague by Philip Vavra, a member of the National Resistance Group, who is also behind the latest invitation. Mr. Duke is set to arrive in the Czech Republic in late January. The precise date has not yet been made public. Mr. Vavra told journalists that the reason Mr. Duke wanted to return to the Czech Republic was to get a satisfactory explanation from the Czech state regarding his arrest and deportation, which he says was not based on evidence. Police have announced that once Mr. Duke arrives, they will be monitoring him closely. From January 2010, the Czech Republic will see an increase in value-added and consumer tax. Part of a new package of austerity measures, the increased taxes are expected to generate an additional 23 billion Czech crowns. The Ministry of Finance hopes that the changes will lower the state budget deficit from 230 billion to 163 billion Czech crowns. Most affected by the tax increase are alcohol, cigarettes, and automobiles. The price of a half a liter bottle of beer will increase by 50 halers. The price of a package of cigarettes will rise by about 2 crowns in February. Value-added tax will increase by 1 percentage point starting in January. The Czech division of the internet search engine Google is expecting a threefold increase in revenue in 2010, the director of the Czech branch of the company, Tatiana Lemoine, told the Četka news agency on Tuesday. Mrs. Lemoine added that Google was one of the fastest-growing companies and that next year, thanks to the internet becoming an increasingly popular advertising space, growth in revenue would be very progressive. In 2007, the company saw a revenue of 28 million. Czech crowns. And now for the weather, conditions over the next few days are expected to be clear, with temperatures between 0 and 5 degrees Celsius. My name is Sarah Barufka, and this was the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Jan Fellinger. Coming up in today's program: 20 years ago this day, Václav Havel was elected the country's first post-communist president. A technical fault in Prague's famous astronomical clock sends its procession of apostles spinning. Plus, we look back on 2009's biggest stories in Czech sport. That and more is all ahead. In a memorable moment of history, dissident and playwright Václav Havel was elected the first post-communist president of Czechoslovakia 20 years ago. His inauguration put the final seal on the country's road to democracy. 2 decades later, most Czechs believe Mr. Havel's role in the process was crucial. Jan Richter reports.
Slibuji na svou čest a svědomí věrnost československé
Václav Havel took the presidential oath in the Vladislav Hall of Prague Castle on the 29th of December 1989, shortly after the Communist Parliament elected him the 10th president of Czechoslovakia. Less than 2 months after the Velvet Revolution overthrew communism in the country, Václav Havel's election signaled that the transition to democracy was irreversible. Political analyst and former aide to Václav Havel, Jiří Pehe, says Mr. Havel's election as the country's first post-communist president was loaded with symbolism.
I think it was a very important event. It was a symbolic event. Mr. Havel was a symbol of the anti-communist movement in Czechoslovakia, and from that point of view, his election was probably the most symbolic gesture one could make, if you consider that just a few months before his election he was still in prison.
In a matter of days, President Václav Havel gained overwhelming popularity around the country. A lot of it stemmed from the sharp contrast between the nondescript communist functionaries and the charismatic personality of the new president. Actress and former personal secretary to Mr. Havel, Bára Štěpánová, told Czech TV how the new president came to ride a scooter around Prague Castle in his first days in office.
We were all wondering what it looked like up at the castle, what went on there and so on. In early January 1990, I asked one of Václav Havel's aides and he told me, it's mad, nothing works. There are no phones, there are really long corridors and we have to run everywhere like madmen. So we managed to get a scooter, which was really difficult, a nice wooden scooter, and we officially presented it to Mr. President so that he could ride it along the long corridors.
To mark the anniversary, Czech TV is showing on Tuesday a new documentary entitled Václav Havel, Prague Castle. The film describes the first few months of Mr. Havel's term in office, from his inauguration to the first democratic general elections the country saw in more than 40 years. Based on interviews with presidential advisers, aides and other personalities, it also features several of world's leaders of the time, including former US President George W. H. Bush.
My impression then was like my impression now. He's a modest man, a humble man, a man with great accomplishment, but I just was amazed that he was so quiet and so down to earth, you might say, not caught up in all the fame. He was just so human and so down to earth that he was very easy to talk to about all kinds of problems.
As it happened, Václav Havel was also the last president of Czechoslovakia, having resigned several months before the split of the country in January 1993. Later that year, he became the first president of the Czech Republic, an office he held until 2003 when he was succeeded by Václav Klaus. Mr. Havel's popularity at home waxed and waned during his years in office, but according to a survey published on Monday, 71% of Czechs today appreciate his contribution to the Czech Republic more than that of any other politician. Jiří Pehe believes that with hindsight, Czechs realize just how much Václav Havel did for the country.
Despite his mistakes, he was a rather successful politician. He was able to project certain idealistic views, ethical views, morality, and so on. And he was a key figure in the process of transition to democracy. And from that point of view, I think he will be remembered as one of the most important figures in Czech history in the 20th century.
That, of course, was political analyst Jiří Pehe, ending that report by Jan Richter. Now we turn to this story. Prague's famous 15th century astronomical clock, known as Orloj in Czech, is one of the oldest and most elaborate clocks ever built, and one of the city's best known attractions. Few tourists leave Prague without seeing it. However, the crowd that assembled to hear it chime last Sunday was in for a shock. Due to a technical error, the procession of apostles that appears in the windows above the clock failed to make its usual exit. Instead, it was spinning like a crazy merry-go-round. Daniela Lazarova has the story.
The This is the sound that hundreds of tourists on Prague's Old Town Square wait for on the hour, every hour. As the clock chimes the hour, death rings the bell, and above the main dial, two doors open for the procession of 12 saints, St. Paul and 11 apostles. The wood-carved figures glide past, each turning to look out of as they reach the window. When the procession ends, the doors shut, a cock crows and a small bell chimes. At least that is what usually happens. Last Sunday at 6 p.m, tourists waited in vain for the end of the show as the 12 saints went into a seemingly endless spin and death rung its bell incessantly. As the crowd swelled to watch this unexpected spectacle, the firm Heinz, which is responsible for the clock's maintenance, called in the chief clockmaker to stop the mechanism before more damage was done. Heinz Martina Nesnidalova says she can't remember anything like this ever happening.
The procession of apostles makes one round in 30 seconds, so in the hour that this went on, they took approximately 120 turns. We've never had anything like this happen before. If there's any problem, it tends to be the exact opposites, with the windows getting stuck and the saints failing to appear.
Clockmaker Petr Skala, who has been responsible for the clock since 1993, explains what went wrong.
The fault was caused by a small component in the blocking mechanism that stops the procession after one round. This small chip comes down and blocks further motion, but it fell apart due to wear.
The clock was back in working order within an hour, and the incident received plenty of publicity. There are many legends linked to Prague's famous 15th century astronomical clock. One says that if the clock stops, the city will suffer hard times. Another predicts that one of the town councillors will die before the year is out. But the old chronicles provide no explanation for what happened last Sunday. Some commentators suggest that the apostles' unexpected merry-go-round may have signalled the beginning of a round of celebrations marking the clock's upcoming 600th anniversary in 2010.
Okay, that was Daniela Lazara reporting on what went wrong recently with Prague's famous astronomical clock. Now, it's that time of the year when many of us are looking back over the big events, the successes and failures of the previous 12 months. When it comes to the world of Czech sport, you could probably say it was something of a mixed year. Ian Willoughby, who brings us a regular sports news roundup here on Radio Prague every Monday, joins us for a look back on Czech sport in 2009. Well, Ian, let's start with soccer. I suppose that was the biggest story this year, the fact that the Czech Republic failed to reach next year's World Cup.
Yes, well, the Czechs had a less than ideal start to their campaign to reach South Africa when they took only 4 points in their first three games, and that gave them a lot of work to do, and at the end of the day, they simply weren't up to it. In the end, even coming second in the group for a place in the playoffs turned out to be too big of an ask for the Czechs, that despite the fact that their group looked relatively easy on paper at least. After the final game of the qualifying campaign, which was a boring nil-all draw with Northern Ireland here in Prague, I spoke to the Czech goalkeeper Petr Cech, and I asked him where he thought it had all gone wrong.
I think we didn't start the qualification well. We drew at Northern Ireland, then when we lost to Poland, and then we had a spell of 2-3 games, we didn't play well, and another draw in Slovenia. I think it was too costly for us, and we dropped too many points at the beginning, and then last four games we did our best and we were chasing the results, but having made three draws in one qualification four draws is too much.
By the way, soon after that game in October, Michal Bílek was named the new manager of the Czech international team. In the Czech league, Slavia Prague took the title for the second year in a row. That was the first time they won back-to-back titles since the 1940s. Otherwise, the Czech Cup was won this year by Teplice, and not for the first time, unfortunately, there were no Czech teams left in European competition at the end of the calendar year.
Okay, Ian, if we leave football behind, hockey is also a great sport in this country. What kind of a year was it there?
Well, in terms of the international scene, the biggest event of the year was the World Championships in Switzerland, where the Czech Republic were beaten by Sweden in the quarterfinals. That was the second year in a row that the Swedes knocked the Czechs out at that point. As for the domestic Extraliga, the title this season was won by Karlo Vivari, and the biggest story in the Extraliga was probably, or more likely definitely, the return of the legendary goaltender Dominik Hašek, who's now back again playing for his hometown club Pardubice, and Hašek remarkably turns 45 in only a few weeks' time.
If we turn to tennis, I guess all things considered, that there the country really did have a good year.
Yes, the big story, of course, was the fact the Czech men's team got to the final of the Davis Cup for the first time since Czechoslovakia won the competition back in 1980. This year, the Czechs beat France, Argentina and Croatia to get to the final in Barcelona at the start of this month. Though, unfortunately, Barcelona was where the dream ended, because it only took Spain, who are led by Rafael Nadal, three matches to beat the Czechs in the best-of-five series. When the Czech team arrived back in Prague after the final, I managed to speak to Tomáš Berdych.
If I'm going to look in this situation, like in general and in the past, I would say it's pretty good achievement, especially for Czech tennis, because it's after 29 years, and it's pretty big for the Czech team, and I'm really happy for that. But on the other side, we went to Barcelona with a little bit bigger expectations, but as we saw, the Spanish team is really the best in the world, and they just prove it, and they play fantastic. So, yeah, all the credit to them, and they just deserve to win.
By the way, Tomáš Berdych is now ranked 20th in the world. The Czech number one, Radek Štěpánek, at 31. He's rather more experienced than Berdych. He's up to a respectable 12th in the world after what was a very good year for him. Štěpánek was particularly impressive in the early part of this season when he won two ATP titles.
Now, the World Athletics Championships were held this year in Berlin, so Czech fans there didn't have too far to go to support their team. Unfortunately, there again, the Czechs didn't have that much to celebrate.
No, well, it certainly wasn't a championships to remember for the Czech Republic. The only medal won by the Czech team went to Barbara Špatáková. She took gold in the women's javelin at the Olympics last year, and she has the world record in the discipline. But unfortunately, the best she could do in Berlin was second place. She told me that all things considered, she was satisfied with silver, though she was disappointed by how poorly things had gone for the Czech athletics team.
I didn't expect such a bad performance, because I think it seemed to me like we didn't have luck, because we were missing the luck, good luck. And the atmosphere was getting worse and worse during the championship, I can say, and Germans were celebrating more and more, and we were getting lower and lower, a little bit. I felt it like this, so I was already happy to leave this place already, because next year is going to be better.
Barbara Špatáková was the Czech Sportsperson of the Year last year. This year that crown has gone to Martina Sablíková, who at only 22 is the greatest ever Czech speed skater. She took two gold medals this year at the Speed Skating World Championships. Before I go, I'd like to mention one other great sporting achievement this year. That was the victory of the jockey Josef Vanya in the Velká Pardubická steeplechase. Vanya is 56 now, and he has already won this extremely tough race 6 times. And I think it's fair to say he really is a living legend of both Czech and international horse racing.
And I have to say, Ian, that I'm glad that you brought that up. That was my personal favourite. Really amazing, Vanya's achievement. I guess now we look forward to 2010 and sports next year. And don't forget, if you'd like to contact us here at the station, the address to write to is english@radio.cz, or you can send us a letter or postcard to Radio Prague, 12099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic. We're always more than happy to hear from you, and some of your comments may even make it into our regular mailbox program. Now, though, we turn to our main feature for this day, in which Ian Willoughby will be talking to a very well-known restaurant critic.
Laura Baranik is one of the Czech Republic's best-known restaurant reviewers. Writing a regular column in the Saturday edition of the newspaper Lidové noviny, as well as running her own blog, The Prague Spoon. During her short career, the 25-year-old has developed a reputation for demanding high standards and earned the enmity of some restaurateurs, perhaps unused to such exacting criticism. I spoke to Laura Baranik at Prague's Café Slavia.
I was born in Canada, but my parents are Slovak, and they emigrated from Czechoslovakia in 1980. And then we moved here after the revolution in 92, just for my father's work.
And tell us how you yourself got into restaurant reviewing.
Well, it kind of happened by chance. I was writing for Expats CZ, and they were looking for someone to try doing restaurant reviews. I was writing some other sort of how to get around Prague articles and how to move to Prague. And so I tried it, and I guess people liked it and kept going.
Tell us about your blog, The Prague Spoon. There are no ads on it, so I presume you're making no money. Why do you do it?
Well, because I actually write my articles in English originally, and they translate them into Czech for Lidové Noviny. So it just seemed kind of a shame to me not to have the English version available to people. It's nice to be able to read the original, I think. Yeah, and I'd already had an English-speaking following, so it just seemed natural to keep it up.
What is it about food writing that attracts you?
Well, I love food. I love to eat. Also, it's just sort of nice to be able to help people out with their restaurant choices. It gives me a lot of satisfaction when people say, you know, thank you for keeping me from going to that restaurant because I would have spent a lot of money and it would have been terrible. Or if the other way around, if they say thank you for the recommendation, I had a great dinner, that makes me happy.
And how do you go about reviewing a restaurant? Say if you decide I'm going to do this place this week, how do you actually go about reviewing the place?
How do I start? Yeah.
And then what do you do? Do you go more than once? That kind of thing?
Yeah, I like to go at least twice. I don't always have such a big budget to go as many times as I would like, so sometimes I have to admit the more expensive restaurants I can only do once, or maybe once and then a lunch or something like that. But yeah, I try to do some research before I go on the history of the restaurant, and then I visit once or twice, make some notes.
I saw one review you wrote of a restaurant in which you said that one of their dishes had made a friend of yours feel like throwing up. Radost, it was. Wasn't that a bit strong, don't you think?
No. I like to just tell the story as I experience it.
It's really strong to say that somebody felt like throwing up. I mean, it also wasn't your experience.
Well, she said it. I believed her. And, you know, I hope and I expect that people take all my reviews with a grain of salt and understand that my taste is obviously different from theirs. And
is there any comeback from the people who you give bad reviews?
Yeah, there's quite often. I get letters, I get comments, I get, yeah, emails. I think the newspaper has had to field a lot of letters and emails that I don't even, and phone calls that I don't even know about. They try not to bother me too much with it.
I know some restaurant reviewers are very well known. Does being recognizable influence how restaurants treat you when you turn up there?
Yeah, I try to be pretty low-key because I have seen that, I have noticed that if I get recognized, things tend to change a little bit. I start getting like freebies coming to the table and better service, and so then it's not only going to be an unobjective review, but it's also going to be a harder review for me to write. So I really try not to call too much attention to myself.
Generally speaking, what would you say is the standard of restaurants in Prague?
How high is the standard? You know, it's pretty high. It's a lot better than it used to be, that's for sure. At the same time, though, Prague is getting a lot more expensive. It's along the lines now of any major European city, and I don't think the standards are up to where they need to be, considering the price level.
Do you think customers get more demanding when they travel more, perhaps?
Yeah, customers who've been around and have seen other places, yeah, definitely. They expect service to be at a certain standard and their food, and a lot of people come here and just have no idea where to start. because there are so many restaurants that are just catered towards tourists that, you know, a local like you or I would just walk by and not even think about ever stepping in there.
Have you had any particular bad or even great experiences at Prague restaurants?
Yeah, I've had a number of both. Yeah, bad experiences generally tend to be with service that is like exceptionally rude. Once I sent something back because it was clearly rotten, and it was just really just an old sauce. I actually don't send things back very often, and they brought it back to me like half an hour later with no apology, and they just kind of mixed some herbs into the sauce and some other stuff. It was obvious that they hadn't done anything to it. They hadn't changed it. I couldn't believe it. I mean, that's, to me, it's just crazy.
Generally speaking, what would you say the standard of service is in the Czech Republic?
Well, it's pretty low if you're going to compare it to some other European countries. At the same time, I think it's gotten exponentially better since I first got here 17 years ago. It's like night and day. I mean, people are much more willing, you know, people are happier, they have smiles on their faces, and it's a lot better, I think.
My last question is being a food critic something you want to do for a long time? And is it also possible, though, that you could run out of places to review?
I did get the feeling a little while ago that I might be running out of places, but it seems to have picked up. There are always new restaurants opening, there's always something else to try. But there is a certain level of burnout, I think, among restaurant critics. It's a hard job, I think, to do for a long time. So maybe eventually I'll take a little break and get back to it. But I love doing it.
Okay, and that feature was presented by Ian Willoughby. The first time you had a chance to hear it was back in July of this year. Now, though we're almost out of time, it's just time now for me to say thanks for listening, and bye-bye.